you about is the budget, just briefly. We had a tribal leaders call yesterday. Perhaps some of you were on it. We get really good support from USET, from Kitke, frankly. He attends all our TBIC meetings, and he's there religiously, and we know we can count on him, and that's very, very helpful. So we are working on our 2014 operating plan. This may not mean that much to some of you, but it'll mean a lot to your administrators. We are also close to producing our 2015 budget request, the President's budget request to Congress. That'll be March 4th that we put that out, the Green Book it's called. And we are about to begin working with TBIC, Tribal Interior Budget Committee, with our 2016 initial budget submissions. So we've got three different budgets sort of in process, which is always the way it is. We will be consulting certainly a lot about the 2016 budget. The 2015 budget's almost finished, and we are still consulting about the operating plan. The 2014 omnibus budget, the one we just got that we're trying to come up with the operating plan for, was pretty good. It took away the sequester, and it restored us basically to our 2012 funding level, which is good. That's a lot better than 2013 when we had a minus 5% across the board, basically. But it's just back to the 2012 level, and Congress gave us some marching orders in the budget, and we have some of our own marching orders that we've gotten from tribes. And one of those, for example, is full funding of contract support costs. And I will tell you, in 2012, we have the same budget we had in 2012, but we didn't fully fund contract support costs then. We had a shortfall. So if we fully fund contract support costs, we have to get that money from somewhere. So we will, you know, we'll have to find the money in the budget. So we're going to have to move things around a bit. We were also advised by Congress to protect Indian education and add some funding there. So we've got to find that money. We also have been told by tribes and by Congress that general welfare assistance is very important because it protects the poorest of the poor. We also are going to be funding the housing improvement program. We're likely going to be funding that, the HIP, which we heard a lot from tribes about. And we also would like to protect the gains that we've seen in law enforcement. So we have a budget. We've got it back to the 2012 level budget. But we're going to continue the minus 5% for some programs so that we can do the other things that we've been told to do and the other things that we need to do. So it's not, it's not all rosy, in other words. There is still will be a minus 5% for some of our programs. And I don't want anybody to be surprised by that because, you know, the sequester is gone, but some of the things that it wrought will continue with us. So one of the other things I wanted to talk about is fee to trust. We've been working really hard on fee to trust. It continues to be a very high priority. We've recently, with the Big Lagoon case, seen the importance of a Kacheri fix so that we can do fee to trust for all tribes. And so that remains a very big priority, and again, underscored by the Big Lagoon case. We can't say too much about that case because we're trying to figure out how we can get involved in it. We're not supposed to talk about cases in litigation. And I've got my attorney sitting right next to me, and so I don't want her to yell at me. But it is a case that troubles us, and we are trying to figure out how to get involved in it, so rest assured. Fee to trust is not just a Western phenomenon. I think that Western tribes tend to, have more activity for fee to trust, but it's important here in the East too. We're looking for ways to protect tribal homelands and where we can do so. Early in my tenure at the department, we assisted the Passamaquoddy tribe recover the Columbia Falls radar site, which was about 700 acres, more than 700 acres in Maine. Former Air Force property, and so we've been looking for opportunities like that for surplus lands around the rest of the federal government because those are possibilities. We've also intervened on the side of the tribe, of course, in Penobscot Nation versus Maine, basically, and are hoping to protect the tribe's boundaries and its fishing rights in that case. So we're really happy about that. Again, protecting tribal homelands is number one priority. The Secretary has asked us to try to get to 500,000 acres before the end of the administration, and we're sitting at about less than 250,000 acres. So we've got a long ways to go. We're really motivated to try to get more land into trust. I'd like to talk a little bit about gaming compacts. That's one of the important things we do. We are, you know, every month we have at least one gaming compact to approve, it seems like. They come in regularly. An early one we had was the Mashpee gaming compact, and so we've been working on that kind of stuff, even with USET tribes. We've got some concerns about the gaming compacts that have been come before us, and particularly the Mashpee compact. Perhaps people know that I've disapproved that compact the first time it came before us. One of our concerns is that a gaming compact ought not be a lever for the state to exercise authority around other policy goals other than gaming. IGRA was intended to give the state a role to play, a minor regulatory role, or at least some regulatory role over Class 3 gaming, but not over hunting and fishing, and not over water rights, not over land rights, or any other thing. It was intended to give the state a small regulatory role in Class 3 gaming only, and so we have been trying to ensure that compacts cover only things that IGRA authorizes them to cover and doesn't have other matters in those. So I would also add, by the way, that a compact is not a place to discuss Class 2 gaming, and we've seen that more and more in compacts. The state doesn't have any role to play in Class 2 gaming, so they don't have any business negotiating about it in their Class 3 gaming compact. And so we've really been trying to draw a line in the sand on that, because the state's in the tribe's business enough with gaming without letting them get into Class 2 as well. And Class 2 was reserved by IGRA exclusively to states. So we're trying to draw a real bright line there. And I'm trying to get the word out, because we don't like disapproving compacts. Once a tribe and a state have done all this work and gotten a compact together and sent it to us, we don't like to disapprove it at that point. You know, in many states, it requires legislative action, and it requires all sorts of work by the tribal council and the tribe. And so we don't like to have to disapprove them, but we will if necessary. And we think there's some important principles to protect there. The other thing that we've been having a problem with is states have also tried to negotiate in compacts beyond just the gaming facility. And we've really tried to make it clear that a state's role is limited to gaming, to Class 3 gaming. It's not a lever to get authority over the tribe's hotel, or the tribe's swimming pool, or the tribe's golf course, or the tribe's concert venue, or any other economic development activities of the tribe. It's to give them a measure of authority over Class 3 if they wish to take it, but it's not a camel's nose under the tent to give the state authority over all these other important activities of the tribe. So we're trying to talk about this so that we get the word out to everybody, and so we don't see compacts coming in with these bad terms in them that we have to disapprove, because we think these are important principles. So those are mostly the substantive things I wanted to talk about. Let me give you a heads up about some things, though. We have the NCAI winter executive session coming up in March, and around that meeting, we are trying to do a heck of a lot of listening and consulting. So one of those we are going to be doing is on contract support costs. We've been directed by Congress to sort of figure out this contract support cost issue going forward. Beyond just full funding, what are the other things that we can do to make this more efficient and that sort of thing? And so we will be consulting on contract support costs. We'll be doing that in conjunction with the IHS, by the way, because tribes have asked us to try to work that together. At the tribal level, even nationally, it's often the same people that are working with both agencies. So they've asked us to try to put our heads together on that as best we can. We don't have the same issues. We don't have the same challenges. But we're going to try to work together as best we can to make it easier for tribes. We will also be doing consultation on 477 programs. That's another issue that's been percolating for quite a while, and we're trying to move 477 forward so it works better for tribes, and so that we can come to some agreement about some basic areas of frustration around 477. We've also been working on ICWA issues, and we're going to do a listening session on our ICWA guidelines, or Indian Child Welfare Act guidelines. Since the baby girl case, which Lister Tompkins was very involved in, we've been really trying to figure out what can we do. The case was problematic, but we're trying to figure out what can we do around our guidelines to make the world better for tribes, and working with HHS and Administration for Children and Families and the other federal entities that have a role to play there. We also will be consulting about our labor force report, which we just released. That labor force report has been a challenge, to put it frankly. And so we need guidance from tribes about how we can how we can do this in a way that doesn't take a lot of resources from other places, because Congress didn't give us any staff, any FTEs to do this labor force report, but it's a real chore to try to do it. And we are not the Bureau of Labor Statistics and we're not the U.S. Census Bureau, but nevertheless we have this role to play here. And we're trying to figure out how we can do it in an economical way that doesn't take away from all of our other services and take away too much from our other resources. One of the tribes that I was talking to about this told me that it would take $500,000 for their tribe to do all the things that it needs to do to accurately report its labor force and its population. And if it cost $500,000 for every tribe, some of them it wouldn't cost that much, I guess, but others it might cost more. And pretty soon you're talking about $250 million to get the population labor force figured out. We can't spend that kind of money on this report, and I don't think Congress intended to do so. But we need to produce a report that has some integrity and has some accuracy, so we need tribal guidance on that. So that's another thing we'll be consulting on. We also want to consult on the Trust Commission report, which is just the Cobell Trust Commission recently issued its report, and we're anxious to see which of their recommendations develop traction by tribes. And so we would like to hear from tribes about that. Finally, we are consulting about Indian education. In fact, we got a letter from you all along with NIEA about education. We'll be meeting with the board later this week to talk more. But we have a study group that's working on how can we make improvements to Indian education. And Mississippi Choctaw and other USET tribes have been very helpful in helping us sort of figure out what the problems exactly are and how we can solve those. We have a new director, Monty Russell, but I will tell you that Secretary Sally Jewell and Secretary Arnie Duncan over at Education, as well as the White House, are very focused on this. They really want to know what we can do to improve Indian education. So we're going to consult on that. So those are the many items that we're going to talk about and have some formal consultations around at the upcoming NCAI meeting middle of next month, I guess it is. So we're looking forward to that. Larry Roberts has been working really hard on our acknowledgement and recognition reform efforts, and we've had a lot of support from the people in this room, and we are very grateful for that. You all have been key to that, to helping us move forward with that. So we're moving forward. We hope to have a proposed rule out within 2 months or so. Yeah, sometime this spring. That's good. That's flexible. We don't want to be pinned down. All right. So I'll take some questions in a little while about it, all of these things or anything else, but I'm going to go ahead, if President Patterson doesn't mind, and introduce Hillary Tompkins, and we'll take questions after she speaks. As Solicitor of the Department of the Interior, a post that she's held for about 5 years, she's going on to her fifth year at any rate, that makes her, she's the highest ranking American Indian, I think, in the executive branch, and we're really lucky to have her at Interior. You don't see a lot of her because she's back at the office most of the time working really hard on getting things done. She's a real inside player at the highest levels of government and the highest levels of department. And when she gets involved in external matters, it tends to be litigation, which, you know, she's not allowed to speak about in public. So you just don't get to see a whole lot of her. But she's doing a heck of a lot, and she's an important ally of all of you and certainly of Indian Affairs. She's really a hard worker. She's accomplished a heck of a lot already, one of which was the Cobell settlement. And the Cobell settlement didn't directly affect very many of you, but it had a strong indirect effect on many of you because it really was sort of the big boulder in the middle of the river of Indian affairs for many years. And if we hadn't gotten that case settled, I wouldn't be sitting here because I sort of vowed back in the 90s that I wouldn't, this job would be impossible if you had to deal with Cobell. And so for all of us, that was a signal accomplishment, getting that case out of the way so Indian Affairs could move forward again. And while Solicitor Tompkins is technically a Navajo and clerked for the Navajo Supreme Court, so I shouldn't say technically, I mean, she's legit. But she does. Her Navajo does come with a bit of a New Jersey accent.
That's right.
And she's a really sharp. So really, the whole staff that seems to be here is kind of from the USET region. I'm Chickasaw, and if if we hadn't made our way to Oklahoma, we had to be from a Uset tribe as well, I guess. But Hillary and I have known each other a long time. We started out as baby lawyers together at the Department of Justice, so it's been fun to be back with her. So thank you for having us to the meeting, and I'll turn it over to her.
Thanks, Kevin. Next time I'll remember.